Unit 19.
Short conversations. In this section, you will hear 20 short conversations. At the end of each conversation, a question will be asked about what was said. Each conversation and question will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the four suggested answers marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer.
1. America is a nation of immigrants. Even the American Indians are descendants of the Mongoloid people of Asia.
Really? I thought the American Indians had always been in North America.
The American Indians are descendants of which race?
2. I think I'll take the half-day tour of the city.
Why not the whole day?
What does the woman suggest?
3. There was a new quiz show on television last night, but we were just sitting down to dinner when it came on.
I watched it and it was great. The first four contestants won only small prizes, but the fifth left with a new luxury car.
What happened last night? 4. Kathy seemed to be quite pleased with her new apartment.
Pleased? She could hardly contain herself.
What does the man mean?
5. This is a one-way street. Didn't you see the sign?
Sorry, I didn't.
What do we learn from the conversation? 6. Oh, hello, Judy. How are you? I do hope you're free next Saturday. We're giving a party to celebrate our second wedding anniversary. You will be able to come, won't you?
Ah, what a pity. I'd love to come, but it's my father's birthday on Saturday, and he'd be terribly disappointed if I should not spend the weekend at home. I'm sorry.
Where will the woman go next Saturday?
7. Excuse me, sir. Could you tell me the best way to get from here to the Empire State Building?
Certainly. Let me see. We're on 5th Avenue now, and the Empire State Building is on 5th and 34th Street. If I were you, I'd take the 5th Avenue bus.
Where's the Empire State Building? 8. If Tom doesn't come to dinner, we'll have 14 people.
Well, let's invite two more.
If everyone comes, how many people will be at the dinner? 9. Could you tell me how to get to the bus station from here?
Go straight until you come to the stoplight. Turn to the left there and go about 3 miles. When you get to the Argo grocery store, turn right, and you'll see the bus station on the left.
How many turns must the woman make to reach the bus station?
10. I'm sorry, ma'am. The train is somewhat behind schedule. Take a seat, and I'll notify you as soon as we know something definite.
Thank you. I'll just sit here and read a magazine in the meantime.
What can you conclude about the train from the conversation?
11. Why do we always have to argue about money? I would rather go out and spend it all so that we wouldn't have to argue about it.
Of course you'd like to go and spend all the money. You don't spend 5 days a week in a factory. Besides, if it wasn't money, you'd argue about something else. I think you enjoy arguments.
According to the man, which statement best describes the woman? 12. Hey, Bernard, Billy Joe Staples is spreading the rumor that you beat your wife.
Well, Ruby, if anyone else were saying that, I'd beat the stuffing out of him. But a person who believes anything Bill Joe says is a bigger fool than he is.
Who isn't supposedly beaten?
13. I must say, miss, the food was great, and I've never had better service.
Well, thank you, sir. I pass your compliments on to the cook, and thanks, too, for the tip.
What is the woman's occupation?
14. I don't think I'll ever forget our first camping trip. We pitched the tent and went to sleep, and when we woke up in the morning, we discovered that 5 inches of snow had fallen. It was so beautiful and so cold, and we had such trouble making a fire.
The thing I remember most is that we could tell from its tracks that a big bear had investigated our tent while we were sleeping.
What was probably the most frightening aspect of the camping trip?
15. Don't put any more wood on the fire until it dies down.
There's nothing left in the wood pile but big logs. You'd better chop some wood for me before you leave.
When should the woman put more wood on the fire?
16. What are you doing your major in?
I think it will either be mechanical engineering or civil engineering. My father wants me to be a lawyer, but I'd rather build bridges or things like that.
What does he want to be?
17. Where have you been, Miss Martin?
I just came back from the hospital. Mr. White was still unconscious when I left. Mrs. White still doesn't know anything about it at home.
Where is Mr. White now?
18. Excuse me, sir. Does the number 1 bus stop here?
Yes, but the bus only runs once every half hour, and one just went by 10 minutes ago.
How long does she have to wait for the bus?
19. I'll take these 3 books. Are they 50 cents each?
The 2 paper books are, but this one is 75 cents.
How much will the 3 books cost altogether? 20. Will you please change this $20 bill for me? I've nothing smaller to pay for my coffee.
No, I'm afraid I can't. I only have 3 fives in my purse.
How much money did she say she had? Passage. What does gambling really mean? It means trying and hoping to get something for nothing, or for very little. I see several reasons why this is foolish and wrong. First, it's foolish. The chance of winning is very small. I have many friends who bet on horses and fill in coupons for the football pools. They've all admitted, when I've asked them, that although they may win occasionally, on the whole, they pay out far more than they receive. Gambling's a fool's game. Secondly, gambling is wrong. It means an immense waste of time and energy, and we, as a nation, can't afford that waste. I'm a journalist. I realize, better than most of you perhaps, what an enormous quantity of newsprint is needed every day to give people the tips they expect about horse racing and about the football pools. That newsprint costs dollars. It has to come from Canada. Think, too, of the hours men, and women, too, spend reading all these newspaper tips and filling in their pool coupons. Surely they could find ways of spending their time more usefully. Thirdly, let's consider the case of a person who does win a huge sum of money in a lottery or a football pool. What's the predictable outcome? Instead of being a useful member of society, as he was before he won a fortune, perhaps as a bus driver, or a postman, or even a journalist, he becomes an idle member of the community, contributing nothing to the national welfare. I've no use for those who do nothing. I have a poor opinion of all those people whose work produces nothing. I mean people like bookmakers and their clerks, and the thousands of girls who work as clerks in the offices of the firms that organize football pools. Those girls would be doing really useful work if they were hospital nurses. You all know how difficult it is for our hospitals to get enough nurses today. Questions. 1. Why does the writer claim gambling is wrong? 2. What will probably happen when a journalist wins a fortune? 3. What do you learn about bookmakers? 4. What can you draw from the last part of the passage? 5. Which of the following is not true?
Story. A very old lady won $1 million in a lottery. Her son and his wife heard the news on the radio. "How are we going to tell your mother?" the wife asked. "The shock might kill her." "That's true," the son said. "Perhaps we'd better speak to her doctor about it. He'll know how to break the news to her gently." They explained the situation to the old lady's doctor. "I'm glad you told me," he said. "A shock, even a happy one, could give her a heart attack. Leave it to me. I'll find a way of breaking the news to her." He thought about the problem for several days, then decided what he would say. He called on the old lady and sat by her bedside. He took her hand in his. "Let's play a game, my dear," he said. "A let's pretend game." "Oh, yes," the old lady said. "I love let's pretend games." "Good. I'll ask you a question first," the doctor said. "Then you can ask me one." He pretended to think for a few moments. Then he said, "Tell me, what would you do if you won $1 million in the lottery?" "Oh, that's an easy one," the old lady said. "I'd give most of it to you, doctor, because you've been so good to me all these years." To her sincere gratitude and generosity came no response but an endless silence. The doctor was now lying on the floor, dead of shock. Unit 20.
Short conversations. In this section, you will hear 10 short conversations. At the end of each conversation, a question will be asked about what was said. Each conversation and question will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 suggested answers marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer.
1. You still have an hour to wait, so relax.
Relax? How can I, when I'm so anxious about the interview?
What does the man mean?
2. Shall I put this equipment away now that you've finished with the lab work?
Not yet, please.
What will the man probably do?
3. Thanks a lot for offering to return these books to the library for me.
4 books? But I have 4 of my own to take back, too.
What does the man mean? 4. May I make a recommendation, sir? The clams with our special sauce are good. They're fresh from the ocean.
Thank you, but I don't care for shellfish.
Where did this conversation probably take place? 5. Do you want me to explain these problems before your exam?
What's the point? I don't understand a thing.
What does the man mean?
6. Should I get some more typing paper?
Please do. We've almost run out.
What will the man do now? 7. Do I have to take the test?
Do you want to pass the course?
What does the woman mean?
8. Mike sure got a big fish last weekend.
You're right. That fish was so huge that it was enough for all of us.
What does the man mean?
9. Do you have to leave already? It's only 9 o'clock.
I'm sorry, but I must. My parents are expecting me.
What does the woman mean? 10. Jane, have you met Doug Brown? I think he is going to your school.
Oh, that Doug? I've heard a lot about him. We've never actually been introduced.
Does Jane know Doug Brown? Spot dictation. In this section, you will hear one passage with some words missing. The passage will be read 3 times. First, you will hear it from the beginning to the end, just to get a general idea of it. Then, in the second reading, you will write down the missing words you hear in the corresponding space. You can check what you've written when the passage is read to you once again. What faces and confuses urban planners is the rapid population increase and the streams of hopeful migrants from the countryside. There have never been cities of 30 million people, let alone ones dependent on roads, sewer, and water supplies, barely adequate for urban areas a tenth that size. And the flood of new arrivals in swelling third world cities far overtakes the supply of jobs, particularly as modern industries put a premium on technology rather than manpower. So it will be virtually impossible to find permanent employment for 30 to 40% of the 1,000 million new city inhabitants expected by the year 2000.
Passage. Avoid the rush hour must be the slogan of large cities the world over. If it is, it's a slogan no one takes the least notice of. Twice a day, with predictable regularity, the pot boils over. Wherever you look, it's people, people, people. The trains which leave or arrive every few minutes are packed. An endless procession of human sardine tins. The streets are so crowded, there is hardly room to move on the pavements. The queues for buses reach astonishing proportions. It takes ages for a bus to get to you because the traffic on the roads has virtually come to a halt. Even when a bus does at last arrive, it's so full it can't take any more passengers. This whole crazy system of commuting stretches man's resources to the utmost. The smallest unforeseen event can bring about conditions of utter chaos. The extraordinary thing is not that people put up with these conditions, but that they actually choose them in preference for anything else. Large modern cities are too big to control. They impose their own living conditions on the people who inhabit them. City inhabitants are obliged by their environment to adopt a wholly unnatural way of life. They lose touch with the land and rhythm of nature. It is possible to live such an air-conditioned existence in a large city that you are barely conscious of the seasons. A few flowers in a public park, if you have time to visit it, may remind you that it is spring or summer. A few leaves sticking to the pavement may remind you that it is autumn. Beyond that, what is going on in nature seems totally irrelevant. All the simple good things of life, like sunshine and fresh air, are at a premium. Tall buildings block out the sun. Traffic fumes pollute the atmosphere. Even the distinction between day and night is lost. The flow of traffic goes unceasingly, and the noise never stops. The funny thing about it all is that you pay dearly for the privilege of living in a city. The demand for accommodation is so great that it is often impossible for ordinary people to buy a house of their own. Exorbitant rents must be paid for tiny flats which even country hens would refuse to live in. Accommodation apart, the cost of living is very high. Just about everything you buy is likely to be more expensive than it would be in the country. In addition to all this, city inhabitants live under constant threat. The crime rate in most cities is very high. Houses are broken in with alarming frequency. Cities breed crime and violence and are full of places you would be afraid to visit at night. If you think about it, they're not really fit to live in at all. Can anyone really doubt that the country is what man was born for and where he truly belongs? Questions. 1. Why is a big city compared to a pot which boils over? 2. According to the author, how can city inhabitants sense the change of the seasons? 3. What are the two main kinds of pollution in big cities mentioned in the passage? 4. What do you learn about the rents in big cities? 5. What do you think is the best title for this passage?
Story. The Ladies' Club always had a meeting Friday afternoon, and someone came to talk to them about important things. After that, they had tea and asked questions. One Friday, a gentleman came and talked to the club about food. There is not enough food in the world for everybody, he said. More than half the people in the world are hungry. And when they get more food, they have more babies. So they never stop being hungry. Somewhere in the world, a woman is having a baby every minute, day and night. What are we going to do about it? He waited for a few seconds before he continued. But before he began to speak again, one of the ladies said, "Well, why don't we find that woman and stop her?"